Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Darren, and I'm an alcoholic. Could everyone please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to a silent profile? And please try and keep disruptions to a minimum. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve a common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In view of our singleness of purpose, we would respectfully ask that sharing be confined to alcoholics. And when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. There may be visitors here who are unfamiliar with our tradition of anonymity. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio and television. This tradition is a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We assure that anonymity is the greatest safeguard Alcoholics Anonymous can ever have. We therefore seek your cooperation in protecting the anonymity of our members at the public level. The format of tonight's meeting will be 3 10-minute speakers, followed by a fourth speaker until approximately 8:30. The meeting will then be open for sharing from the floor and closed at 9 o'clock. Can we have a moment's silence to remember Tradition 5? Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Our first 3 speakers tonight would be Richard, Kay and Billy.
My name's Richard and I'm an alcoholic. I feel sick with nerves and self-centeredness at the moment, which you have to excuse me. What a big meeting to share it as well. Any visitors and any newcomers, welcome. This is where I find recovery. To me, this is the best meeting in the world. I didn't feel like that when I first come through these doors to this meeting just under 5 years ago. I knew I had a drink problem, didn't feel like I was an alcoholic, but I knew that I, with all my willpower, I couldn't stop drinking. I didn't drink every day, didn't drink in the mornings, still worked, and I didn't identify with a lot of people because I was looking for the differences. You know, I thought, you know, I didn't drink at work, and, you know, I didn't drink every day. I could work all week and not think about alcohol quite easy. You know, I wasn't obsessing about it every day. But coming to meetings and carry on drinking usually every weekend, but I think I stay sober for about 3 weeks and then I relapsed again. I thought, right, I'm going to get a sponsor and I'm going to go through with this. I don't think it's going to work for me, but I'm going to just go for it. And the things I started, you know, I started identifying little by little, more and more, I identify with the fact that people sharing about going to a bar and thinking, I'm not going to drink tonight. It's the middle of the week. I can't get hammered. I've got work tomorrow. And just walking to the bar thinking, get a Coke, no, get a beer. Get a Coke, no, get a beer. Alexis shares, says that a lot. And I can identify with that. And then getting to the bar. And sometimes I could just stay on Coke. Very rarely, but I wouldn't feel like I was enjoying the night. More than 9 times out of 10, I would have that lager. That pint of lager, maybe a shandy first of all, or half. I think I'm just, you know, that mental twist. I'll just have one. I'll just watch the football and have a couple of beers, and then I'll have another one. And I've shared this many times, but there's people here that hasn't heard my story. I'd know what I'm like, so I'd set an alarm on my phone to get me home by about 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock when the football's finished. And I'd have a few drinks because, you know, I know what I'm like. Normal people, I'm sure, do not do these sort of things, but my alarm would go off. It's telling me to go home, and I'll be halfway through a beer, and I'll think, nope, I'll just have another one. This is going fine. And then I'll reset the alarm to tell me to go home again. I'll do it again and again, and then I'll be so drunk I wouldn't care, and I'll get home 4 o'clock in the morning. And these type of things happen all the time. It doesn't matter how much, you know, I swear off. I wouldn't take out so much money with me. I wouldn't take my cash card out with, you know, all these sorts of things, and I'd always end up plastered. I'd go out on a Friday. You know, I wouldn't drink a lot all week, if at all. I'd go out on a Friday for a few hours, and I'd come home Sunday. That's what my drinking was like. And after 10 years of this, my mum tried getting me into AA when I was a teenager, and I just went up the pub with my friends just laughing about my mum bringing AA. But when I was in my mid-20s, I realised I started having a drink problem. And one day, one different to any other day, I was just sat in my room, and I wasn't hungover or nothing. I just realised that all of my problems, all of the bad things that happened in my life even, had all happened as a consequence of drink. And I realised that I was never going to amount to much as long as I kept drinking. And I tried many times to stop drinking. As I say, it didn't, you know, I'd be drinking within a couple of weeks. So I thought, right, I'm going to go to AA. I'm going to, you know, try and sort myself out and, you know, control my drinking and things like that. And I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in May of 2004. And I looked up the address, found it on the AA website, went to that meeting, and it was everything that I thought it would be. I went there, and maybe it was my headspace as well, but the meeting was like that. It was small, and it was quite depressing. The people that were there didn't set my imagination on fire, to say the least. They said to me, "Life's shit, son, and the sooner you realise that, the better." And I thought, this is dreadful. You know, I kept going for about 3 or 4 weeks, and they wanted me to share as well. And I mean, everyone here, if you're Nesha new, knows how much I dislike sharing. And at the time, obviously, I hadn't gone through the steps as well, and I thought, I would sooner beat you up than share, right? And that is the honest truth. I'm not exaggerating that. I thought, I'd sooner smack you in the face than start sharing here. So I carried on drinking, and then I came to this meeting, and I was like, you know, looked up on the internet again, come along the road outside. It was packed outside, and I thought, is this it? Because, you know, these people looked like, for the first thing that captured me and wanted me to start taking actions was what they were doing. What, you know, I could see that they had something, they were had attractive lives, and they were happy. That's the first thing that attracted me. None of, you know, I didn't come through and think, oh, great, the steps, God, that looks fantastic. I'm not that type of person, to say the least. So I came through, I spoke to Adam first, wherever he is, I know he's here tonight, and then I spoke to my future sponsor, my next sponsor, Wayne, and didn't want nothing to do with God, didn't want to get a sponsor, but he's, you know, I just sat and listened, and after, as I said, I relapsed a couple of times, I thought, well, I'm going to ask Wayne to be my sponsor. I was quite nervous at that time, I'm just going to do everything they tell me to do, unless it's something completely weird, because, you know, I've got all these conceptions, it's going to be, you know, they're going to get me to do things, go up on the moors and do something strange, you know, some sort of cult activity. So, because I'm quite a negative, I'm quite a cynical person. So anyway, I had these thoughts and that. None of it happened. I just, you know, did things that I wouldn't naturally do. I got involved in service straight away. You know, I definitely wouldn't have done that. I was a greeter on the door and a cleaner. I went through the steps. I was as honest and as thorough as I possibly could be. Shaking people's hands, ringing newcomers, all these things. And within days, I felt better. I started feeling better within days. For me, I was lucky. The compulsion to drink left me as soon as I threw in the towel. You know, when I was here still drinking and not having a sponsor, not going through the steps, I felt like crap. I just sat here thinking, I kept looking at the clock thinking, this is so bad. You know, is this what my life's going to be? But as soon as I gave in, I just had that sense that everything was going to be all right. And it was. You know, from that day to this, I haven't thought about drinking not once. I've not had that compulsion that a drink will be nice. It'll be a couple of pints in it, everything will be all right. As I said, sponsorship's been absolutely key for me, because I would have done nothing at all. I wouldn't have got involved in service. I mean, one of the first things my sponsor said to me is, you're in luck, there's a conference this week and you can put yourself forward for service. And I had been hanging around meetings for a couple of months by then, and I thought, shit, if I had just waited an extra week, all right, there wouldn't be a conscience for another 6 months, and I could have dodged that 6 months of service. That's my thinking when I come in through the doors. How long have I got? It's quite hard to judge a 10-minute share, I think. About 3 minutes. And I'll tell you one thing, Bridget's lucky she's not here tonight. After last week, she would have got it. So any newcomers, I mean, if you're anything like me, I come here and didn't think I wanted any part of this. I didn't, you know, people kept saying the same thing, get a sponsor, go through the steps. And it was just driving me crazy. I was just thinking, I'm not as bad as you lot. I don't need to do that crap. I don't need a sponsor. I haven't got any problems apart from drinking. I just didn't want to do it. And I didn't have many feelings of difference until I got here, really. I didn't, you know, it wasn't until I got here and people were sharing about feeling different and not having a plan as a child. I mean, that's not my story. I felt relatively comfortable. I was always naughty and used to worry a lot, but generally I was quite comfortable in groups of people, especially my friends. So I felt different only when I got here, really. But it's, I mean, if in the big book, it says this is what I identified a lot. If when you want to stop drinking, you can't stay on, you know, you can't stay stopped. Because I could stay stopped. If something tragic happened or something really bad, I could stay stopped for a couple of weeks. But I would always pick up that first drink. And when I pick up that first drink, thanks, Darren, I've got little or no control on how much I drink. And that's all I needed to start. You know, I know when I pick up a drink, I've got little or no control what's happening. Usually, no control whatsoever. And that's the sort of things I identified with. As I say, I've got 2 minutes now. It goes so fast in 10 minutes, and I always think I'm going to run out of things to say. If you're new, just get yourself a sponsor. If you're like me, you'll be thinking, no, I don't want to do that. You've got absolutely nothing to lose. If you're here, you've got problems. You wouldn't be here else. Get a sponsor. Say to yourself, I'm going to be thorough. I mean, it's nothing strange. I thought it would be, but it's nothing at all. Say, right, I'm going to give it, I don't know, say it a month. And if you are guaranteed within a month, you'll be thinking, I wish I'd done this years ago. I mean, that's my story. And that's it. Thanks very much.
Hi, good evening. My name's Kay. I'm an alcoholic. God, the meeting looks huge tonight. I'm very grateful to be here and welcome to any visitors. You know, this is my home group. This is where I got sober. And, you know, like Richard said, I mean, to me, it's the best group in the world, you know, because it's given me a life that I couldn't have dreamed of, you know, a life that I really wouldn't have thought I was capable of living. You know, it's a very ordinary, normal life. I mean, today I spent the day with my daughter, my eldest daughter, my youngest daughter, and my grandson, you know, and we were down the park, and we went out for something to eat, and the sun was out, and I just thought, how lucky am I, you know, because if I could try and picture myself, if I'd carried on drinking, if I was still here, you know, I'm sure I would have been one of these really embarrassing mums where, you know, my eldest daughter would either be bumping into me in a nightclub and I'd be drunk as a skunk, or her friends would be saying, I saw your mum out last night, you know, and she's passed out or acting sort of like crazy, you know, and she'd want nothing to do with me, you know, I'd be a complete embarrassment, you know, because that's what I was like at the end of my drinking, you know, and as it's a progressive illness, it gets worse, you know, and it's just the thought of living like that, you know, to the life that I've got now is incredible. You know, it really is. You know, I've got a lovely, lovely life, and it's all down to this, you know. And the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know, alcohol doesn't come into my consciousness at all. I don't even think about it, you know. And I was having a clean out a week or two ago, and I was sorting out my daughter's wardrobe, old wardrobe, sorting out, throwing out all the stuff, getting rid of everything, and there was a couple of miniature bottles of vodka that she was given and some shot glasses. And I put them in the bin and took them outside and put everything out. I never even thought twice about it. And it was only when my daughter had said she was suffering from toothache. She said somebody had said to her, maybe gargle with alcohol. And I said, oh, well, mate, try it. And she said, oh, she said no. I said, oh, I said, there's something I've just thrown out. And then just the thought of actually, I've thrown out vodka, you know, and not even thought about it, you know, and then thought, God, you know, because I was obsessed with it. You know, I was absolutely obsessed with it. And, you know, that is a miracle for me, an absolute miracle. You know, it's not even an issue. You know, I came in 2000 and, you know, I was in a state. I mean, I drank alcoholically for 16 years. You know, I was a daily drinker. I'd started isolating and I was suffering from panic attacks and paranoia. And it was affecting my daughter, who was 10 or 11 at the time. And I couldn't stop drinking. You know, I tried self-will, I tried doctors, I tried counsellors, you know, I was on antidepressants, nothing worked, you know, and I knew it was the alcohol, you know, and I could see what it was doing, and my whole life was just, my whole world was falling apart, and I couldn't stop drinking, and I was told to go to AA, you know, and I arrived at a Road to Recovery meeting, and I just felt so ashamed to be there, you know, I thought, God, if my life's come to this, you know, going to an AA meeting, I can't get any lower than this. And it was sort of like I was ashamed and I was embarrassed. But when I sat down and I listened to the people talking, I was just amazed, you know, because I really felt like it was just me. You know, I felt like there was something wrong with me. I knew I was an alcoholic, but I didn't know anything about alcoholism, you know, and I was taught about alcoholism. You know, on the first night it was made clear, you know, get yourself a sponsor, get yourself a big book. Let yourself be taken through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and as alien as it was, as much as I didn't understand it, you know, I bought the book on the first night and I was told to read the doctor's opinion, you know, and just reading. I mean, I'd always thought with drinking, it was sort of, I used to think if I could just level it off about seventh or eighth drink, you know, and just not carry on, not go on to the shorts or whatever, you know, I'd be all right, I'd be able to get some type of control, but I didn't realise it was the first drink. You know, I was just like bodily and mentally different from other people. You know, as soon as the alcohol went into my system, I had no control, no mental defence at all. You know, I had to carry on drinking until the job was done. You know, and I drank like that from where I'd go. You know, I drank from 14, and the minute I drank alcohol and got drunk, I just loved the way it made me feel. I loved what it did to me. And for years, I carried on trying to drink to sort of like recapture these feelings that I had. And I never did, you know, and I just deteriorated over a period of time. And when I came to the meetings, it was just like, I remember saying to a friend at the time, I was reading the book, I was going, that's me, you know. And when I was told what I needed to do, you know, there's very simple suggestions that you're given. I think a lot of people, alcoholism, it's one of them things you can convince yourself that you haven't got it. I think it's the only disease that tells you you haven't got it. My head will tell me I'm okay, you know. And I was told all the pitfalls. Everything was laid out for me, you know, what I needed to do. And I started on the steps. You know, I did as I was told, quite simply, because I didn't have nowhere to go, you know. And the results that I got very early on were incredible. You know, I remember I took a couple of months with me because my head was still going. I wasn't drinking. But I remember doing my evening prayers one evening, you know, thanking my higher power for a sober day. And I remember thinking, I haven't thought of a drink today. I haven't thought about alcohol, because even when I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about it all the time. I was thinking about if I went past a pub or if I went shopping. It was always, it's just like I was drawn to the alcohol aisles and things like that, you know. And it was just crazy. But this was lifted from me. It was just lifted from me by doing very simple suggestions. And I didn't understand them, you know. And I didn't understand how to be sponsored when I came in. I didn't know what to say to my sponsor, you know. I had to learn that, because I used to phone up everyone else. I used to say, this is going on, that's going on, what do you think? And my mum used to say one thing, and a friend used to say another thing, and I used to phone my sponsor and say, oh, well, my mum reckons this, and my friend reckons this, what do you think I should do? You know, I didn't understand it, you know, and all of a sudden it clicked one day, because something happened, and the first person I wanted to speak to was the sponsor, you know. And I think from that day forward, it was just, you just got to do what you're asked to do, you know. And the amazing thing is, we're all working from the same hymn sheet. We all are asked to do the same thing. I haven't come in and they've said, well, this will work for UK because you're slightly different, or, you know, James or Debbie does that, but you do this. You know, we all get well by doing exactly the same thing, you know, which is laid out in the text of Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book, you know. And we all need a sponsor. I need a sponsor. My thinking when I first came in was all over the place. I thought I was all right, but I can guarantee you 9 times out of 10, when I spoke to my sponsor, she would say the opposite. You know, it's only as time's gone on, so my thinking's become okay, you know. But going through the steps, I mean, it's just amazing. It's just amazing the life that I've got. I mean, when I was drinking, I couldn't hold down a job. You know, I couldn't be consistent with my daughter. I couldn't be consistent with anyone, with friends. I wouldn't turn up. And just through the discipline of actually having a meeting and going to my meetings, doing my suggested things, It's taught me to live in the outside world. It's taught me how to live on life's terms, you know, because life doesn't stop when you come into Alcoholics Anonymous and everything is rosy. You still have to deal with situations that come up. But the amazing thing is, you do deal with them. And situations that would have baffled me and confused me and I wouldn't have known where to start, you know, I just look at the situation, I check it out with my sponsor, and, you know, I put in the footwork. And I know without doubt that it's going to be okay. Because it always is, you know, it always is. And I've got this peace of mind and contentment in my life that, oh God, I've had my peace of mind and contentment. And I've never had that before. You know, I remember at the end of my drinking, I remember my dad saying to me, Kay, what is it you want? What do you want? And I said, I just want to be happy. I just want to be happy, you know. And I can honestly say I'm happier now than what I've ever been, and I'm happier at this point in my recovery than what I've ever been. You know, I've got a contentment and peace of mind. You know, I'm just happy with what I've got. You know, I'm happy with the life that I'm living. You know, I can be a mum today, you know. And as I say, I've got a grandson and a little girl, and I've got a fantastic relationship with my eldest daughter. You know, I work with children, I do childminding. You know, I've changed careers and I do childminding, and I've got such a wonderful life. You know, I honestly go to bed every evening and think, how lucky am I? You know, how lucky am I? And I wake up in the morning looking forward to the day, and that's not how I felt when I was drinking. You know, I used to wake up and it was just like Groundhog Day and I just wanted to die. You know, and I just appreciate everything so much. And everything that I've got is down to this. You know, it's not my doing. I've just done it the Alcoholics Anonymous way. Do you know what I mean? I've just done it the way the people have in the room who've recovered. You know what I mean? 12 steps. That's it. That's all you need to do. It's guaranteed to work for you. You know, it really is, because I thought it wouldn't work for me. And if it has worked for me, which it has, it will work for you. And I promise you that. You just have to put in the action and keep on doing it. So thanks very much.
Billy, I'm an alcoholic, and very grateful to be here, and I really enjoyed the last two speakers, and I'll just share a bit about, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like for me now. My drinking career, I started drinking right about the age of 11. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 27, and throughout that period, there were some very good times. You know, there was times when I really enjoyed drinking, and there was also times where I would get into a bit of trouble and all that kind of stuff. And then near the end, the last 2-3 years of it or whatever, it became a bit of a living hell, really. You know, and especially that last 6 months to a year, you know, that last period just prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, any of the good times had gone. You know, I think it talks in the vision for you about, you know, one more attempt and one more failure. And then it goes on to describe, you know, the four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. And, that was the feelings, you know, apart from the drink, that was the feelings that I could really identify with by the time I'd got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because I felt awful. You know, I really did. The drink had stopped working. You know, any pleasure, you know, that sense of ease and comfort that I once had from taking, you know, a drink had gone. And I was out of ideas. You know, I was baffled. You know, at the time, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. You know, I thought I was too young. Prior to coming into AA, you know, I was heavily in debt. You know, I would go out and spend money that wasn't mine on nice clothes. So on the outside, I didn't look too bad, you know. But in the inside, I was absolutely shot to bits. You know, I just couldn't seem to stop the madness that was going on in my head, and alcohol had stopped working. You know, I mean, that was a crazy thing. You know, it just wasn't doing for me what it'd done previously, but I couldn't leave it alone. You know, I mean, that mental obsession, you know, just getting up in the morning and just saying, I'm not going to drink today, you know, I'm not going to touch it, and then come the afternoon, you know, be off drinking again. And a lot of the time, you know, the people that I was hanging about with, you know, I became a bit of a standing joke. You know, the guy who was always going to say that he wasn't going to have a drink, and I'd kind of laugh along with it, but inside, you know, I felt, you know, I had a lot of remorse and guilt, you know, not just around my drinking, but I did think I was very weak. But also, my behaviour progressively got worse. You know, the things that, any morals that I did have, which, you know, when I set out, you know, drinking at the age of 11, you know, I did have some things that I would say to myself that I'd never do. You know, come the end of my drinking, you know, I was doing, you know, my standards just kept getting lower and lower. And after I do these things, you know, I try and stick it down as deep as I possibly could inside myself, you know, and there was a lot of shame and remorse around that. And, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, as I say, at the age of 27. You know, I just wanted to give up drinking. You know, my last drink, I was out with people who I didn't want to be with. You know, I didn't particularly like the company I was with. You know, I just remember sitting there thinking to myself, you know, I didn't want to listen to them. I just wanted to drink, you know. And I got home that night, and, this is just my experience, you know, something that I would I'd go out my way to convince people there wasn't a God. You know, for anybody that knew, Alcoholics Anonymous is not a religious program, you know. There is a spiritual aspect to it, but for me, that's been very practical. But anyway, I said a prayer on that last drink, something that I wouldn't normally do. And I said, if there's a God, can you help me? And I got up the next morning, completely forgot about it. And a week later, I ended up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I've got to say, although I did that, you know, my reasons for coming to my first meeting, a lot of them were wrong, apart from the fact that I wanted to give up drinking. You know, my sister had been in AA before me, and I'd asked her a little bit about it, and you know, I got sober in London, and she was like, oh, you know, it's great, you know, you'll see some famous people there, you know, they're all doing it. And I thought, that sounds all right, I might go and check that out. So I got to my first meeting, but from that first meeting, you know, I've been sober just over 11 and a half years now, you know, and for somebody like me, that's an absolute miracle. You know, I couldn't do 2 days without a drink, but from that first meeting to this, I've never had to pick up a drink, you know, and, you know, that in itself is a miracle. But, you know, when I came into AA, it took me, you know, not that long really, probably about a month without a drink to get a full knowledge of my condition, you know. Meetings alone, you know, and untreated alcoholism, and I knew I was in big, big trouble. And for somebody like me, you know, that gave me that gift of desperation, because, you know, I came into, you know, self-will run riot, you know, never listened to anyone, you know, always thought I knew best, you know. And, you know, that period of being in AA without a drink, just, you know, the game was up. I just knew that I couldn't do this on my own, you know. I'll just share very briefly, you know, for the kind of thinking that I had. I just, for some reason, you know, I just was one of these people who just always thought I knew best, you know. I thought I might have been an undiscovered genius. I never did that, anything to kind of back that up. But, you know, I remember turning up for a sales job as a car salesman, and, you know, there's about 30 of us doing the course, and at the end of the training course, the guy said, somebody in this room's got the highest IQ that we've ever had in this course. And I instantly thought, that's me. You know, that's got to be me. But and there's, you know, nothing to back that up, but that's just the way I thought, you know. But I came into AA, and as I say, you know, I had that gift of desperation, but also, like it's been shared tonight, you know, I saw happy people. You know, I saw happy people who were getting on with their lives, and I just wanted to be happy. You know, I just didn't want to drink, and I wanted to be happy. And, you know, I turned up, you know, the meeting that I got my first sponsor, you know, I remember people told me, don't go there. You know, they wear shirts and ties, they're not alcoholics. So, you know, being an alcoholic, somebody tell me not to do something, I did it. You know, I went down to that meeting, and, you know, I just liked what I heard, you know. I just knew that, you know, the guy who shared, the guy who became a sponsor, his whole deportment shouted at me that he had a solution, and I asked that guy to take me through the steps. Like it's been shared tonight, you know, for me, it's been absolutely essential to have a sponsor. You know, the steps, you know, it was pointed out to me that I needed to find a higher power, you know, a power greater than myself to keep me sober. And that's what the steps are all about, you know. And I could see that this guy had something I wanted. And I asked him to take me through the program. And straight away, we got down to business. You know, he told me it's a program of action. You know, I couldn't think myself well. And he said, put this first. Build your life around your recovery and get to step 9, you'll be a free man. And he gave me some simple things to do, you know, things that I wouldn't normally do. I mean, you know, simple actions. I mean, you know, a couple of them I had a bit of difficulty with. I mean, one of the things that he suggested, he said, if anybody angers you, upsets you, pray for their success and happiness. And, you know, but we'd agreed at the beginning to go to any lengths. So, you know, I remember doing it. And there was times that when I was praying for these people who I didn't like, you know, praying for their success and happiness, you know, I was seriously worrying I might be doing them some good, you know. I mean, that's the way I was thinking. But, you know, my sponsor pointed out to me that as an alcoholic, you know, I can't afford to live with people in my head. You know, I can't, you know, the I think, is it, you know, the grouch and the anger and the grouch and the brainstorm or something like that are the dubious luxury of normal people. But for the alcoholic, these things are poison. And you know, I really believe that today. You know, I have to keep on top of all these things, you know. And basically, I just copied this guy. You know, I was told, stick with the winners, you know. And the winners for me were the people who were happy, who were getting on with their lives. I've worked through the steps, you know. Service, you know, I was encouraged to do service early on, and I've continued to do service, you know, throughout my recovery. And And you know, my life today, you know, I'm down in the my group, we come down every year to Plymouth, you know, and my sponsor's down here. You know, this is the 11th time that I've come down with a group, and it just keeps getting better. You know, it's just amazing stuff. You know, the fellowship in itself, you know, it just really is fantastic. You know, on the outside, things have changed, you know. I've met a beautiful lady, you know, I've got a couple of lovely kids, you know, I've held down the same job for, you know, 6-7 years or whatever, and like it's been shared, you know, I mean, you know, life has thrown at me all kinds of difficulties, you know. But like the book says, you know, the joy of living we have even under pressure, you know, even with difficulties. And that's been my experience, you know. I've been able to, I wouldn't trade the hardest day or the worst day that I've had in recovery for the best day that I had drinking, you know. I mean, if there is anybody new here, you know, you really have struck gold. You know, there's a fantastic life in offer in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you need never drink again. And like this, the sign says on the wall there, you know, misery's optional. But for me, you know, it would have been impossible to do without a sponsor. You know, I still have a sponsor today. You know, you still got what I want. You know, I still take guidance, and that's been absolutely key. And I'll leave it there.
Thank you, everyone. Now I'd like to introduce tonight's final speaker, Mickey.
Hi, everybody. My name's Mickey and I'm a fully conceded alcoholic. I identify that way in Alcoholics Anonymous because in the beautiful book Alcoholics Anonymous, this beautiful book that I held before me here now, it says we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. So I identify as a fully conceded alcoholic because it's the first step in recovery, and I discovered what that was right here. And that meant that there was two first steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I wanted to know what they was. I thank you for allowing me to come here. I thank Wayne for inviting me here. I thank the folks that have already shared. I'm just having a little gratitude attack right now, as a matter of fact. Anybody know what I mean by a gratitude attack? You know, where you come over just all kind of like that, just like you're hugging your kid or something. When I got here, you know, I never had anything to be grateful for. I never knew nothing about gratitude. I mean, what's gratitude? It wasn't even in my vocabulary. Gratitude? Screw gratitude. And yet the truth was that I've had something to be grateful for ever since I was born, ever since I was christened, you know. My name's Mickey Bush. Mickey Bush. Think about that. Mickey Bush. That puts me somewhere between a mouse and a president. You know, anywhere in that spectrum is where you're likely to find me. You know. And I'm really grateful they never named me Harry. Can you imagine going through life with a name like Harry Bush? You know. You know. You're a rotten lot laughing at that, you know. So I don't know that, you know. I love the laughter, the language of the heart in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the name Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the sound of Alcoholics Anonymous. I like people who say Alcoholics Anonymous a lot. You know, I love your poster. I love the name of your group. You know, Road to Recovery, R&R. We get some R&R here, you know. And Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what, Alcoholics Anonymous, I say this because if I kind of piss anybody off, and I don't deliberately do that, but sometimes I do, you know, this is what Alcoholics Anonymous means. Look, A-L-C-O-H-O-L-I-C-S, Alcoholics. A-N-O-N-Y-M-O-U-S, Alcoholics Anonymous, stands for a life centered on helping others lives in complete sobriety. Actions, not our names, yield maintenance of unity and service. That's good shit, isn't it? And I never knew that when I got here, believe me. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous on January the 15th, 1983. Broke, busted, disgusted, and not to be trusted. You know, helpless, hopeless, and powerless. And I didn't know anything. I never came here with the only requirement for membership. I knew nothing about nothing when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, January the 15th, 1983. I was so sick. I was so sick when I got here that I didn't know I was sick. Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be so sick that you don't know you're sick? That's really sick. You know? And when you're as sick as I was when I got here, so sick that you come into a room full of alkies like this, good alkies seems to me, and you scan the room, because I'm a good scanner, you know, and you scan the room, you think, well, I ain't as sick as him. Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be in a room full of alkies thinking you ain't as sick as the next guy? That's really sick, you know. So if you're in here tonight wondering whether you is or whether you isn't a real alkie or not, I want you to know that I can relate to being as sick as you don't think you are. You know, really sick. And I never knew. I never knew when I got here. I never knew nothing about nothing. I thought I knew everything about everything. Because when my butt's on a bar stool and I'm drinking for 6 hours, I know everything. Don't matter what you've done, where you've done it, how many times you've done it, who you've done it with, I've done it more and better. You want to know how the space shuttle blew up? I'll tell you, because I know. In fact, I only missed being on it by that much, because I was busy at the time. I was drinking. I was busy drinking. Alcoholics are very busy drinking. Yeah. But I think I know everything about everything, but I knew nothing about nothing when I got here. When I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys will know why you do what you do. I hear you sharing. I've heard it here tonight. You know, people in Alcoholics Anonymous talking about why they drank. You know, and I heard people say, well, I drank because I couldn't stand the pain. I drank because I couldn't stand who I was. And I drank because I was hiding behind who I was. And I drank because I had all these issues. You know, like pass the tissues, I got issues. You know, and I think, at what stage of the game do you discover that? I can't even imagine that, me. I don't know nothing about that. How would I know? You guys knew. I don't know why you do what you do. I don't know why I did what I did. I can't even imagine. I can't imagine going into any pub I ever drank at and saying to the bartender, oh, bartender, hit me with a triple shot of your best booze. Because I can't stand who I am and I want to cover up the pain tonight. No? It never happened. Oh, Mr. Dealer Man, give me an extra rock of crack cocaine because I really feel inadequate. Never happened. Never happened. I have no idea why I do what I do. I've always done it. Where I come from in Harrow on the Hill, you know, everybody drinks. I live in Los Angeles now. I've been living in Los Angeles for 31 years, you know, but I'm originally from Harrow on the Hill. Everybody drinks. I don't know why we drink. Everybody just drinks. We never had a reason to drink, never had a reason not to drink. We just drink. We drink if the team wins. We drink if the team loses. If it's a tie, we drink till there's a result. We just drink. Don't know why we drink. You guys all know why you do it, and I didn't. When I got here, I had no idea. I had no idea who I was, what I was, what I was doing, what was wrong with me or what to do about it. Never knew nothing about nothing, and that's not true today. My name's Mickey Bush. I'm an alcoholic. I'm in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I know what's wrong with me, and I know what to do about it. Got it out of the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Love this beautiful book. I didn't know what had happened on January the 15th, 1983. I do today. I discovered that what happened on January the 15th, 1983, was different to whatever else had happened any other time that I came out of a blackout in January the 15th, 1983. I'm a blackout drinker. Any other blackout drinkers here? Yes. And the rest of you lying mothers. I know blackout drinkers when I see them. I never even knew what a blackout was. I come off a three-day run, you know. There's an old saying, when the pupil's ready, the master appears. I didn't know where I'd been. I didn't know what I'd been doing. But I knew it wasn't right. When you're a blackout, any miracle drinkers here? No miracle drinkers here? We'll see how far this denial goes. It's a disease of denial. D-E-N-I-A-L. Don't even notice I am lying. Right, we'll see how... I was a social drinker. Any social drinkers here? Every time anybody said, I'm going for a drink, I said, social eye. Any social drinkers here now? Oh, see? No miracle drinkers? Nobody ever go out drinking and have a miracle develop in front of their very eyes? Nobody ever go out drinking and drink somebody good looking? No? Oh, blimey, I don't know what's happening in Plymouth, I do. So I don't know nothing about nothing when I get here. On January the 15th, 1983, I did something which isn't mentioned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hit bottom. Hitting bottom's not mentioned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, folks. Anybody read this book, by the way? Who reads the book? Nobody? Good, good. There's a few of us here. Good book. In the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, hitting bottom's not mentioned. But it's so powerful and it's so important that in... The 12 and 12, in the first chapter of the 12 and 12, first step of the 12 and 12, which Bill wrote 12 years later, more had been revealed to him too. And in the very first step. He said, why all this insistence that every alcoholic must hit bottom first? Now that's some ballsy shit to say to a bunch of drunks who don't like authority and being told what to do. We insist that every alcoholic must, M-U-S-T, my using stops today, must hit bottom first. Because it's the process that brings me back to the power I've abandoned to ask for help. And I didn't even know that I'd abandoned the power. I never knew nothing about the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first of the 12 steps. Now, we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery, but it's not the first of the 12 steps. It's a totally different step, though often confused. And a lot of, not good stuff happens because of that confusion. Admitting I'm alcoholic is not the first of the 12 steps, but I've got to learn to fully concede that I'm alcoholic. A totally different thing to admittance, acceptance and surrender, which ain't mentioned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, folks. So, fully concede to my innermost self that I'm alcoholic. I'm alcoholic not because of what I do, because I'm alcoholic, not because of alcoholic addictive behavior. I'm alcoholic because I'm physically and mentally different than my fellows, and alcohol has an abnormal reaction on me. What alcohol does for the alcoholic is that it changes my perception of reality. It changes my perception of reality, and I can't stand reality. I hate reality. I don't like reality. I don't like who I am, what I am, where I am, doing what I'm doing. I hate this rotten world with you rotten people doing rotten things. And alcohol makes it okay for me to be here. I call it a nerd remover. Alcohol removes the nerdness. I feel like a nerd, I drink, and I don't feel like a nerd. I feel like a nerd and I drink and I don't care if I'm a nerd. I feel like a nerd and I drink and you're a bloody nerd. Screw you. Alcohol changes my perception of reality. See? And I heard that the very first meeting I got to when a guy got up in my face in that very first meeting and said, you're an alcoholic. I said, what? He said, you're an alcoholic. Now, contrary to what a lot of people think, in the beautiful book, it don't say we don't tell people they're alcoholic. It says we prefer not to. But when Bill and Bob did the third man on the bed, they told him, you are an alcoholic. And that's what you guys did to me on January the 15th, 1983, because I never knew. I said, what do you mean, alcoholic? That's a mean thing to say to somebody, that is. What do you mean, alcoholic? He said, you're alcoholic. I said, why did you say that? He said, because if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and sounds like a duck and smells like a duck, it's a bloody duck. Just because he's been taking some shit and thinks he's an eagle, no, you're a duck. You're a duck, I'm a duck. Quack, quack, he went. I went, wow. Wow, holy shit. And I went, wow, I thought about it. Alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic. He said, I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholic? I'm an alcoholic. Wow. Wait a minute. They've been locking me up for being crazy all my life. I ain't crazy. I'm an alcoholic. Far out. Being alcoholic was like a step up for me. I went, wow, far out. Alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. Wow. I couldn't wait to run home and tell my best friend, the one who'd kicked me out that morning. I went home, I said, hey, guess what? I'm an alcoholic, I'm powerless over alcohol, my life's unmanageable. He said, no shit. I thought he was going to be surprised. Weren't no one surprised, only me. And I'm glad I'm alcoholic. I've loved being alcoholic ever since. You know, and I never went to the meeting to quit drinking, but I haven't drank from that day to this, nearly 27 years ago. You know, I love being an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I hit bottom, you know, on January the 15th, 1983, I didn't know what it was. I had no idea. I had no idea why I needed to do it, and I didn't know what it was. I found out later, because the first thing I ever heard in Alcoholics Anonymous before I even got in the door of Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on January the 15th, 1983, was I heard those magic words, keep coming back. I heard it from a guy outside the meeting. Now, as I walked out of this meeting, they tell me I was grey, shaky and smelly. As I approached that meeting, not knowing nothing about nothing, one of these dudes, there was two dudes outside, and it was in West Hollywood. West Hollywood's a very special part of Los Angeles, commonly known as Boys Town. You know, it's kind of where all the nice boys live. And outside this meeting, one of these guys stepped forward with his hand out like that. Now, I don't know nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know nothing about the love of one alky for another. I don't know nothing about meetings, Big Book, 12 Steps, or any of the other stuff that we have around here today. I don't know nothing about a disease called alcoholism. I know nothing about nothing. And this guy's standing there with his hand out. I said, what do you want? He said, I want to welcome you to AA. I said, what? He said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, what? And the other guy stepped forward with his hand out. He said, keep coming back. I said, what for? He said, we love you. I said, I bet you do. And I snuck round them and walked to the community centre, and there in the doorway, I looked in the room, and there was about 30 alkies in the room smoking. They all smoked then, and they were all talking. Every one of them was talking. And you know what? I've been coming back ever since. I love that. Keep coming back. You know, hitting bottom, I learned, was what the difference between January the 15th, 1983, and any other time that I'd come in these devastating situations. See, I'd never hit bottom before, and it's so important and imperative. I didn't know that this disease, this all-powerful disease, this fatal disease of alcoholism, long before I got here, had gotten me to abandon God and spirituality as far as alcoholism was concerned. And this disease had become the power in my life. Years before I got here, the disease had gotten me to abandon God and spirituality, so that along the path of life, sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly, the disease becomes all powerful in my life, dictating and dominating everything I say, do, think and feel. And in and of myself, I have no power to resist its demands. Powerless. I didn't know what powerless was. I found out here. Powerless wasn't what I did because I'm powerless. Now, I've been asking you guys since I've been down here, what does powerless mean? Afraid to say, not many anybody here have even come close. I don't know any other speakers that are giving a definition of powerlessness either. If you do, let me know who they are, because I want to connect with them. I want to talk to them. But powerlessness isn't what I do because I'm powerless. Powerless isn't the consequences and the results of being powerless. Powerless is the absence of power. Powerless means no power. And what we read out here tonight, it says, where there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. Well, if I got to find him, it means I ain't got him. So powerless equals no power. God equals power. Therefore, powerless equals godless. When I get here, I have no God in my life to combat the power of the disease that I'm in the grips of and under the spell of, and in and of myself can't resist its demands and have to drink. Hitting bottom is the process that brings me back to the power to ask for help. Now, most people think hitting bottom is the outside circumstances and conditions of their life at the tail end of their drinking, but that's not true. We think and believe and say that, but that's not true. Hitting bottom is not about the outside circumstances and conditions of our life. Hitting bottom isn't the outside circumstances, and believing that it is very dangerous for alkies, because believing that those outside circumstances and conditions of our life is the bottom, when they get better and improve, we falsely believe we've gotten better and improve and drink again. But hitting bottom's not about the outside circumstances and conditions. Hitting bottom is an inside job, not an outside circumstance. And that's what happened to me on January the 15th, 1983. And if you remember back, it happened in some capacity for you too. See, on January the 15th, 1983, in desperation and despair, hurting so bad, alcohol had stopped working. Alcohol was no longer removing the nerdness. Alcohol was no longer making it okay for me to be here in this rotten world. Alcohol was still getting me drunk. It was still rotting my liver. It was still blacking me out. It was still doing all the devastating things that alcohol does to the alcoholic in the tail end of their drinking. But it wasn't changing my perception of reality anymore. And I don't know what you brought to recovery, but what I brought was a lot of hurt and hate. Hurt and hate. Hurt and hate. I hurt and I hate everything. I hate women. I can't stand women. I hate homos and queers and anybody different. I hate black people. I'm totally racist and prejudiced. I'm from London, England, living in Los Angeles, and I hate foreigners. I can't stand me. I hate you. Get away from me and don't come near me. And with all that turmoil going on, I still have to try and present to you a picture of somebody you will like. Because I'm living in this false, phony, lonely, despicable state. And I've got to present to you a picture of somebody you will like, because if you don't like me, I'm screwed. Hitting bottom isn't about the outside circumstance. I know we do. I asked a couple here. I asked one little girl. I said, what was your bottom, love? She said, well, I was feet to the curb, hustling the Broadway, prostituting myself, trying to earn a dollar so I could get loaded. I said, it wasn't your bottom. She said, I think it was. I said, I don't care what you think. I said to the dude, what was your bottom, pal? He said, that's easy. He said, I was locked up in a penitentiary, married to Bubba. I said, that wasn't your bottom. He said, it felt like it was. Hitting bottom's an inside job, not an outside circumstance. On January the 15th, 1983, without knowing what I was saying, without knowing who I was saying it to, without knowing what the results of what I was going to say was going to be, I can remember hurting so bad. And I can remember going, help me, please, help me, what's wrong with me? And asked for help. And guess what? Though I'd abandoned him, he hadn't abandoned me. And it was almost like he was looking over my shoulder and he seemed to say to me, Mick, you silly bugger, I've been waiting for you to ask. Now get yourself over that 12-step fellowship. Sent me to you. I asked for help and he sent me to you. Because here was the power he provided for an alky of my kind, your kind, our kind, the beautiful book says, to not have to drink today. Whew. Here was power. Here was the power provided by God. This power in this room, right here, right now. This power in this room that's of God and from God and provided by God, but is not God. This power that's of God and from God and provided by God, but it's not God. That now enables an alky to not have to drink today. There must be a power in this room, mustn't there? We've got probably, I don't know, 150, 200 people in the room. If we haven't got a power in this room right here, right now, enabling upwards of 200 alkies to not be drinking here tonight, and we suffer from a disease that we're powerless over, when we leave here, this disease that makes me do what I already don't want to do and I can't not do it because I don't want to, this disease that is so powerful it makes me do it even though I don't want to do it. So I can't not do it just because I don't want to. I got to not want to do it, then do these steps and this work so that I don't do what I already don't want to do. And if I ain't doing these steps and this work or ain't done these steps and this work, I will do what I don't want to do because the disease I got that I'm powerless over will make me do what I don't want to do. You think I knew that shit when I got here? Never had a clue. But if we don't have a power in this room right here, right now, when we leave here, we'll have to go and get drunk. I don't know Plymouth very well, but I got a feeling that Plymouth ain't ready for 200 alkies to go out and get drunk tonight. So we must have a power here, mustn't we? I turn back to God and ask for help. He sends me to you. There's so much more to God than the power he provides alkies. That's why in the third step I could turn my will and my life over. In the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, this beautiful book, it says he can choose any concept of God he likes, provided it makes sense to him. That's a condition. This book that says of itself, our book is meant to be suggestive only. May I bloody well meant to be suggestive only, but it ain't. It's got clear-cut, precise instructions, directions and rules to follow. One of those is he can choose any concept of God he likes, provided it makes sense to him. So find something that makes sense to you that's going to save your butt at 2 o'clock in the morning when the demons are screaming and your arse is in a sling and you've got a drink so bad your guts are being ripped out. You better have more going for you than the fact that you don't want to do it. Anybody know what I'm talking about? See, and anything that works for you is okay by us. We don't care what it is. You can have any concept of God you like. You know, Catholic God, a Jewish God, a Hindu God, a Muslim God. You can have a leg of the chair God. You can have a doorknob God. You can have any kind of God you like. Nobody cares. Nobody cares what you call it. Call it bloody Mashiganovich if you like. No one cares. As long as you've got something that makes sense to you. Why? Because we've learnt some shit around here. We've learnt, for example, that all the gods, no matter what kind of God you got, and anything you got is okay by us to save your ass. If you've got a God of your understanding, nobody cares. It's up to you. Because it's got something, you know, in common with every other God. See, if there's 200 different gods in here tonight, they've all got at least one thing in common with every other God. You know what that is? All the gods send their alkies here. Don't they? That's good shit, isn't it? So why would I leave you? Why would I leave a beautiful, strong group like this with structure and a big book, a beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous? If you come to LA, give me a call. My phone number in Los Angeles is 818 area code, are you sober? 818, are you, like Toys R Us, S-O-B-E-R. Are you sober? S-O-B-E-R. Sober, you know what sober means. Son of a bitch, everything's real. That's what sober is. You see, because we're different than those folk out there. Those folk out there don't understand me. You folk do. The laughter I love in Alcoholics Anonymous. They say, if you're laughing, you're relating. And if you're relating to a sicko like me, there ain't no doubt about you, pal. I tell you that. I don't get through to no well people. My mum never laughed at my shit. I come home here to London, England, see my mum every year. You know, first thing I do, go round to her house in Potter's Bar, knock her up. I tell her, Mum, I'm 26 years sober. She says, so is the cat. She don't give me no pat on the back for not doing something I shouldn't have done anyway. You know, she's Mum, I'm going to bingo. But I come here to be with you in the solidness of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new or returning, if you're a keep coming backer, become a sticker and a stayer. Become a sticker and a stayer. Come and stick with us. Come and keep coming back here. We love you. We love you like beyond what's measurable for the alcoholic to stay clean and sober. I love that. I was told I was a celebrity in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, yeah, bloody big deal, a celebrity in an anonymous program. You know? Yeah, big deal. You know? Namaste.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.